Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week, we're going to talk about the continuing budget showdown in West Virginia. How can we disarm and come to an agreement? Joining me is Lori Lynn. She's a conservative columnist who tweets at WV Pundit. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And Rick Wilson, who is fresh off his trip to the International Goat Herding Conference in Switzerland. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, y'all should have been there.
So first, we're going to talk about the budget showdown. This week, almost all the House Democrats joined forces with Tea Party Republicans to kill a 45-cent increase in the tobacco tax. And this was the only revenue-generating measure that seemed to have a chance to help close the $270 million budget hole next year. Lori, why did these strange bedfellows join to kill the cigarette tax?
So the Democrats wanted presumably a higher tax. They would like the tax to go up by a dollar. I think they also saw the opportunity and are continuing to see the opportunity to make the Republican leadership look bad by slowing this whole process down. I was a little bit surprised that the Democrats were able to hang together so impressively. I thought that Armstead would be able to peel off at least five or six Democrats to vote for it, but they really stuck together. He only got one. So that was the Democrats. And then on the other side, you have this group of really hardcore House Republicans that are completely adamantly opposed to any tax increase, and they are just not going to vote for any higher taxes.
Well, I mean, I think we really have a revenue problem here, and I think the roots of it probably go back several, maybe 2006 or seven, when they passed that earlier tax reform, which was intended to create a prosperous economy and took a lot of money out of the budget and set a lot of things up for, made us more fragile when there's a downturn.
I thought the estimate I saw was like $500 million from
a year
from those budget cuts, bringing our tax rates more in line with surrounding states when it came to business taxes, things like that.
The immediate revenue problem, right, is the severance tax. I mean, that's what we are immediately missing. That's what kind of dried up just more recently and maybe coming back partially eventually, probably will never be coming back.
Coal and gas. It's interesting because the gas actually might be the bigger problem.
The tax is a function of the price. And so when the prices tank, then the collections tank. And then they also stop taking it out of the ground.
And when you talk to the number crunchers in Charleston, part of the issue is that this is just the beginning. What will start happening is happening is that as miners are laid off, their income is going down and it's affecting income tax receipts. And on top of that, you have people that are just worried about the future in the state and starting to sort of pull back on their spending, and that's affecting sales tax. And so we're just at the beginning of what's probably a 2 or 3 year cycle of dealing with this downturn. And, you know, I don't want to forget that we're talking about the state budget crisis for 2 weeks now. That's just like the tip of the iceberg. That's just a sign of the larger problem underneath, which is all of the economic weakness that's going on in the state right now.
It's extreme fragility, and that's what happens when you're solely relying on one or two factors. And that's why I think the previous round of tax cuts made the state rely more and more on severance things. And there, you know, so that when anything happens there, we know that extraction industries are always boom and bust, always have been. I mean, we were in a depression here in the 1920s when the rest of the country was booming.
It's also an outside versus inside question, because the severance tax is, you know, talk about exportable taxes, meaning a tax that you can get people other than your population to pay. And the severance tax is a pretty good tax on that score, in the sense that, so we had a big chunk of state government that was being paid by people outside the state. And now, you know, that's gone away. And we have no choice but to look inside the state. So we're talking about raising the tobacco tax, which obviously West Virginians would pay, the consumer sales tax. And so again, you're asking people to pay more, as you said, Scott, who, you know, have been affected by the downturn in the economy. So it's kind of like a double whammy.
And so there are only really three ways to be able to balance the state budget. One is revenue increases, and it looks like right now those are in trouble. We'll see what happens. The second is further cuts. There is across the board, which at this late date, I mean, we're about a month away from the new fiscal year. It seems to me like that's probably the most likely scenario, because the other type of cut, which would be a targeted cuts to different agencies, there's a limited amount that you can do in a short amount of time. I think that's the preferred cuts of a lot of the Republicans in the House and the Senate. And yet, as they try to do it, they found it to be difficult, Lori.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to just target, you know, a specific agency or a constitutional officer and say, you know, 6% off of your budget, 10%, you figure it out. And in some ways, that is the better way to do it, because those people actually know their agencies, give the decision-making power to the people who are closest to it. But, you know, then again, in some ways, you wish that you could see the lawmakers taking a little bit more responsibility.
So one thing I think would be a common sense. I mean, I think a revenue increase is really necessary right now. I don't know whether we'll get it. And if it, in fact, is regressive, you could offset some of the regressivity with an earned income tax credit, soften the blow for those that would be hit harder. But something else to think about what actually drives an economy. There are three main factors. You know, one is consumer spending, which, you know, we don't have, it's getting worse right now. People don't have a lot of money. The other is investment, and we're not exactly awash in that. And the third is government spending, which creates demand and things. So if we're going to see all those shrink, then you could really have an echo effect where things get into a feedback loop. It could get worse and worse.
Rick, which tax would you raise? Would you do the cigarette tax and the consumer sales tax, something else? What's your preference?
I mean, I think it would be, as a former smoker, you know, with a bypass to prove it, I think a substantial increase in the cigarette tax would be good. It's not a permanent solution, because if it works right, fewer and fewer people would be smoking. And again, if we do increase other taxes like sales taxes or things like that, as long as they're offset, I think that could provide some of the things.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but first, you're listening to The Front Porch, and as you just heard, it's a tough time in West Virginia state government. More than ever, we're depending on our listeners, people just like you, who are part of our 10,000-member West Virginia Public Broadcasting Friends Group. These are people that donate at any level to help make sure that The Front Porch, West Virginia Public Broadcasting's other programs, come to you each and every day. So, if you're not a member yet, and you've been waiting for a reason to do it, now is the time. I'd ask for you to please go to our website, wvpublic.org, click that donate button, and take the 2 minutes it takes to become a member at whatever level makes sense for you. Keep The Front Porch and West Virginia Public Broadcasting strong, even in these trying times. And thanks. Hey, Rick, let me ask you a question. We started to get into this last week. There's a lot of talk about our bloated state government. It does appear to be larger than other states per capita, or definitely compared to our income. Why do we have a larger government here than other places?
Well, we also have more centralized government, partly because of a tax limitation amendment that was passed around the time of the Great Depression, which limits the ability of local governments to raise money. So the state does more things here. But what's really sad, like in the coal fields where there's all this hardship, I think in Boone County, 70-some teachers are being laid off, and other places where you have kids who really need help and support to get through. I mean, this could have a real ripple effect. So this is not, these massive layoffs of the public sector are not going to be an economic boon to West Virginia at all.
Do we have more state workers because we're low income? Is that why? We have more federal money coming in for programs for people? Is it because we're rural? That's another theory, that rural states have more government workers because it's not as efficiently distributed.
One thing I've noticed is, because this is a poor state, the average income is pretty low, the state jobs with the associated salaries are fairly good relative to the rest of the population. So you have, you know, state workers who are able to have a middle class lifestyle, and that makes those jobs even harder to pare down, because, you know, the people who have them really, really want to keep them. There aren't a lot of alternatives.
Yeah, it probably builds resentment among people who don't have them. They look and say, well, I don't have health insurance. You know, why should these state workers have health insurance?
And you see that a lot in the attitude towards Charleston around the state. You know, Charleston is just this capital of pencil pushers and, you know, people living off the rest of the state workers.
Speaking of health insurance, though, you did see the story that we've had the biggest drop in the number of uninsured of any other state. Something to think about. Also, if you look at what West Virginia needs to be viable, we need a good infrastructure, we need a good education system, we need an affordable higher education system, and all of these cuts and meltdowns could really, just impact. And we need a good quality of life. So we're going to auction off Babcock State Park to the highest bidder, you know, and where's it going to end? So I think there could be a lot of damage if there are massive cuts.
The other thing that they can do, and it will be doing to some degree, the third thing. So number one was raise taxes. That's in trouble. Number two, cut programs. That's a given, but unsure which ones and how much. Number three is dip into our savings accounts, which is the rainy day fund, which is built up over a long time. And then there are also some agency accounts where they've been able to save up a little bit of money and sweeping all those and putting them back into the pot. But Governor Tomlin has expressed some deep, deep unwillingness to go into our savings account to balance the budget. Why? Why not? Isn't this a rainy day? Why not dip into it?
I think you might get a different response if there's a good faith effort to look at the other parts of it too. Also look at the revenue side. There's probably if there's some good faith compromise, something else would be a good source of revenue. And we've talked about this, the sugary drinks, they are really, really bad for our health.
A Mountain Dew tax.
They add an enormous amount. And again, there's a benefit principle. If people consume health services and things like that, have a higher public cost to that, then this would offset some of that.
Currently taxed at all? Were they not part of the exemption with the food tax? There was something about that.
Very old sugary, very small sugary drink tax that helps support the WVU medical school, I think.
So that's still in place?
Yeah, that's still in place. But I think, without some way that wouldn't necessarily hurt the medical school, that's an area I think we really need to look at.
I was going to talk about lobbyists too, because two of the biggest lobbyists are the beverage organizations, beverages, mm-hmm. pop and beer and the like.
Listen to you, pop.
Yeah, soda.
Midwesterners.
Sody pop.
West Virginia's on that divide between soda and pop, right?
Yeah, some people do say pop.
Or Coke even for everything. So the soda/pop/Coke distributors and the beer distributors, huge, powerful group in West Virginia. And on top of that, also tobacco, which still has some clout. And there was even a speech from the floor, if you might remember, of the Senate talking about the clout of the tobacco industry when they were talking about whether to exempt smokeless tobacco. So
that really was a moment, wasn't it? To not tax smokeless tobacco.
It was also a moment to have it called out on the floor. I think a lot of times people don't realize how things work inside the Capitol, and they either think that it's all above the board, or more likely they think it's slimier than it really is. But what really does happen is lobbyists have a huge amount of ability to inform and educate and even present model bills to lawmakers who don't have the expertise or the time to figure things out. And so you do have these relationships where you're dependent on these lobbyists.
Especially if they have a lot of money, represent a lot of economic power, which, that would be terrible if that happened, wouldn't it?
One discussion with the tobacco industry, people were talking about with the tobacco tax, if we only increase it by 45 cents, the tobacco companies will just give people coupons. And so that won't lower the rate of smoking. But my thought with that was, so you're saying the tax, the 45 cents additional, will effectively be borne by tobacco companies giving these coupons. Is that the end of the world if we're going to have, the incidence of the tax falling on out-of-state tobacco companies? It's still going to be money coming in to the state. I mean, I guess my frustration over the past couple of days is that, keep your eye on the ball here. The pressing problem is we need to balance the budget.
Have we lost the ability to compromise in the West Virginia legislature? We've never in our history, to my knowledge, come to this point where we may or may not pass a budget. So there must have been times in our state's history when things were dire, and yet have we ever come to a point where we're talking about literally shutting down the entire state government? There is no... The framers of our Constitution couldn't imagine this day. So there's no contingency plan. There's no way for the government to continue on July 1st if they don't pass a budget. Everything shuts down. All state employees are laid off. I'm sorry, not laid off. That's too kind. They're fired. They lose their job entirely. State police, the people that run our prisons. I mean, it's hard for us to imagine this happening. And yet here we are. We are a month away from that.
And something to think about, about the state budget. I mean, these numbers don't quite work now, but it's sort of a little way of thinking about it. Almost half of our general funds goes to K-12 education. About 10% goes to higher ed, and about 20% goes to things like human services for the elderly and things like that. And You know, the rest, which isn't much, goes for things like public safety, parks, you know, communications and all the things like that. Those are actually pretty good priorities. They're the kind of things we need if we're going to thrive. So, I mean, I think it would be a terrible thing if it comes to that.
But in some ways, the enormity of what would happen if we don't have a budget is, I think, going to force some kind of compromise, even if it is at the 11th hour, just because it is so unthinkable to have everything just grind to a halt on July 1st.
So this being too depressing to talk about anymore, let's talk about something more interesting and fun, which is the politics of it. What does this mean for Jim Justice and Bill Cole?
Well, if I was elected governor, I'd demand a recount as my first official act.
Because you don't want to be elected?
Yeah, who would want to govern this, right?
Lori, what do you think? How's this shaking out? How's Senator Cole, who's running for governor, of course, how's he dealing with this situation?
Well, it's certainly good for Justice and bad for Cole, just for the simple fact that Justice is an outsider. You know, no matter what party he is or associate, he's not part of this mess. And Senator Cole, obviously, is the president of the Senate. So the fact that the legislature is having such difficulty, you know, I don't think it is his fault particularly, but it, you know, he is part of what is perceived as the problem.
Senator Cole put out a press release the other day basically saying, you know what, House of Delegates, you guys come back to us with a plan, because we want you to tell us what the cuts are. In a way,
like, who's the upper house here, though? I mean, that's a, you know.
I don't think I think all those old rules have gone out the window. I'm going to say something outrageous. The Budget Digest is gone. Little things like that, the little amounts of money that the House and Senate finance chairs controlled, that had an influence on members who wanted it. And now that that's gone, I just kind of wonder what's to keep a Republican in the House who signed a no tax pledge. Why should he listen to the leadership and go along with the tax? What sort of, you know, why can't Governor Tomlin get any Democrats except for one to vote for his proposed tax increase? What's happened to party loyalty?
And I don't know that Tomlin tried that hard, though.
His proposed tax relief was a package of several revenue things, not just one, I think, too.
Okay, granted. So maybe the House Democrats would have voted for the sales tax increase, although Rick will push back, maybe not, because I remember they were against the telecommunications tax during the regular session. The House Democrats opposed the governor's tax on cell phones. So
he can't get anyone to even sponsor these bills. I mean, if, you know, put your name on it, introduce it at least. And you know, if it goes nowhere, it goes nowhere. But the Democrats aren't even willing to assign their names to any of these increases.
Lori Lynn, do you see a scenario where maybe they could get a $1 tax increase?
Well, it sounds like that's kind of the next door that they're going to knock on. If all the Democrats would vote for it, then you'd be close and you would just need, what, 10, 15,
15
Republicans,
or so.
Which I think you could get.
But would that be the end of, Speaker Armstead's speakership? Would he face a revolt inside his own party for doing something like that?
There would certainly be a lot of people complaining. I mean, yeah, I think you raise a good point, which is, where is kind of the party? Because that is the one thing that you would think that Armstead or someone would be able to hold over these people's heads. Everyone in the House is up for re-election this fall. Are we going to help you? Are we going to give you money for your campaigns back in your home districts? Or, you know, are we going to say, hey, look, guys, you caucus with the Democrats. You're on your own. And frankly, you know, you're giant pain in the butt, so we're not going to be that sorry if you lose. And they have a 13-member cushion, so they could afford to lose a few and still keep their majority.
That assumes that these are districts that are competitive, though. I'd have to look at each one.
Yeah,
I kind of wonder how many of them are drawn in such a way that the Republicans feel very safe in them and don't feel like they have to worry about it.
Well, McGeehan voted against right to work, so I don't know what's going on in it, but I would guess that he at least felt some pressure over that.
So, prediction time. We're taping this on Thursday morning, folks, so things could change, but I'm going to force Rick and Lori to game out what they think is going to happen. And the winner, what should the winner get?
I got this.
All right. The winner's going to get some fresh eggs from Rick's farm. All right.
That would be like a zero gain for me.
Or have you even gotten a mug from us yet?
Yeah, you did give me a mug.
I'll get you another mug.
I don't have a farm, but I'll have pesto in August when my basil finally gets big.
Rick, what's going to happen?
I predict it's going to be a goat rope.
What's a goat rope?
It's an expression for just a real mess.
What? Why goat rope?
I think it's a rodeo term. I first heard it when I was in the fire department, and one of our teachers was, anytime a situation was a real mess, he goes, "Boys, we got a goat rope here." And I just kind of, so yeah, I think it's going to be a goat rope, whatever happens. And
that's not a prediction. That's just a description of what's actually happening right now.
And we'll continue.
All right, Lori, give a less safe prediction here.
I predict that this time next week, we still will not have a deal. But eventually, I mean, I keep returning to my tobacco tax, which I still believe will happen in some form and should happen. And then I do think there will be some pretty sizable chunk of money taken out of the rainy day fund, whether it's, you know, quote, a raid, as some have described it. I mean, Tomlin has said only a few million. What's a few? I mean, a few is like three or four. Is that his ceiling? I think it will end up being more than that taken out. And then, of course, you know, you get into questions of the state's bond rating, because that affects, you know, what Wall Street wants, the rate at which we can borrow money. Wall Street wants to see a nice fat rainy day fund. So, but I do think we will end up with quite a bit taken out.
I think the House will come back with a proposal that's no tax increases, very heavy on cuts, and very heavy on sweeping funds and the rainy day fund. I think they'll present that to the Senate. And I think that the Senate will probably go along, and then it'll be up to the governor. And I think that the governor is the sort of practical man that will want to do everything in his power to avoid a shutdown. And he'll blink. That's
my prediction. He does not. He doesn't strike me as someone who takes advantage of situations politically when he could.
Well, he also doesn't. I mean, politically, he's a lame duck. Not a lame duck, actually, technically. But he's not running for re-election. Sort of unclear what his political future is, if any. So he doesn't necessarily have the same political incentives to, you know, blame it on the Republicans. I don't know.
He has no incentive to compromise, really.
Right, right.
Except for the fact that I don't think he'll want to see the government shut down.
No.
West Virginia politicians tend to get brave right before they retire.
Yeah. But administratively, you're right. It would be a nightmare for him, for the executive branch, if the state, I mean, legislators go home and they don't have to deal with the fallout from that, but it would be him and his people.
Well, and one last thing. I want to give props to an article you shared with me, Lori, that lawyer Mark Sadd from Charleston had in the Charleston Gazette Mail. You should go read it. And it talks about the future of Charleston, and it's dim. And one of the things he says is that we're a town that's been built on largely rent-seeking and government funds. One thing to think about, even for the Republicans and the Republican leadership, Tim Armstead's from Kanawha County, is what will happen to Charleston and Kanawha County when all these things happen to state government? Kanawha County has had some of the impact of the coalfield layoffs, but not as much as some of the coalfields. But I predict some really bad economic times here in Charleston if there's any sort of furlough / massive layoff. And I think that has some of the Republicans in this capital city area concerned as well.
There could be blowback all over the state on this, I think, potentially.
So, Rick, what's your Bible verse for this week?
Zacchaeus come out of the tree. He was the tax collector that Jesus saw.
Why was he in a tree? What's the background here?
It just came to me. He was sort of an outcast, you know, because he was a tax or toll collector, and Jesus came to a village and, you know, saw him and said, "Okay, come here." And Zacchaeus, you know, did right by people after that.
Zacchaeus was up in the tree to see Jesus,
right?
It's one of those things where he's trying to get a better view.
So it's like he got called out of the stands, sort of.
Yeah, he's probably one of these guys that doesn't want to be in the middle of the crowd because he's not that well-liked. He hangs out in places where people don't see you, and Jesus saw him and called him out. What did Jesus tell him? Do you remember?
Well, it was, I think that, and the punchline was that this day salvation has come to a son of Abraham, I think. I mean, it just occurred to me. But also, the one about taxes that keeps coming back is where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's like, let's see what you got, because this is where you see what's important to people. I've used that one before, but I mean, the shoe fits, you know.
All right, that's Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, and we've been listening to Lori Lynn, conservative columnist who tweets at WV Pundit. Thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks.